What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Dylan LeClaire is the senior market analyst at UTXO Management. He also writes a newsletter with Bitcoin Magazine. In this conversation, we talk about Bitcoin, on-chain metrics. We talk about Bitcoin's price, the market structure, and what to expect in the coming weeks. I really enjoyed this conversation with Dylan, and I hope you do as well. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. Today's episode is sponsored by the Bitcoin 2022 conference. Bitcoin 2022 is the largest Bitcoin event in the world that takes place April 6th through the 9th in Miami Beach, Florida. All 4 days will be jam-packed with exclusive content, exciting announcements, and an incredible lineup of Bitcoin speakers, artists, and leaders. Day one is industry day for enterprising Bitcoiners who are looking to build a business or career within the ecosystem. Days two and three are general conference days featuring speakers like El Salvador President Nayib Bukele, CEOs like Michael Saylor, Elizabeth Stark, Jack Maulers, Adam Back, and hundreds more. The conference caps off on the fourth day with the world's first and largest Bitcoin music festival, Sound Money Fest, headlined by rapper and fellow Bitcoiner Logic, featuring artists K. Flay, Mo, Royal, and The Serpent, Apache, Asadi, and more. Stay tuned for the upcoming lineup announcement. Last year's conference sold out, and this year's is on pace to be 3 times larger, so make sure you grab your tickets before it's too late. Visit b.tc/conference to learn more. Again, that's b.tc/conference to learn more. Ticket prices increase on January 14th. Use promo code POMP for 10% off, and I will see you in Miami. Today's episode is brought to you by Fundrise. You all know I believe that the best investors both understand and seek out extreme asymmetry. Fundrise is here to help you do just that. It's the largest direct-to-investor real estate investment platform out there, giving you the opportunity to achieve upside of an asset class previously reserved for institutions and high-net-worth individuals. That's right. Fundrise is making high-end, private market real estate investing accessible to everyone via an easy-to-use automated platform. Its 1 million users already know that the investment with Fundrise is capable of producing strong appreciation returns and income generation while helping to stabilize a diversified portfolio. That's more important now than ever in our inflationary environment. See for yourself how over 190,000 other investors have built a better portfolio with private real estate. It takes just a few minutes to get started with as little as $10. Go to fundrise.com/pomp today, and for a limited time, you'll get $10 when you place your first investment. Again, that's fundrise.com/pomp. Go check it out, and when you make your first investment, they'll give you $10 on top of it. fundrise.com/pomp. Today's episode is brought to you by Brave. Brave Wallet is the first secure crypto wallet built natively in a Web3 crypto browser. What's Web3? Web3 is freedom from big tech and Wall Street, more control, and better privacy. But there's a weak point in Web3, your crypto wallet. Most wallets are browser extensions, a Web2 technology. That means the same old risks, app spoofing, phishing scams, and theft. Brave Wallet is different. Brave Wallet is the first secure wallet built natively in a Web3 crypto browser. No extension required. With Brave Wallet, you can buy, store, send, and swap assets, manage NFTs, even connect other wallets and dApps, all from the security of the best privacy browser on the market. Whether you're new to crypto or a seasoned pro, it's time to ditch those risky extensions. It's time to switch to Brave Wallet. Download Brave at brave.com/pomp and click the wallet icon to get started. Again, go download Brave at brave.com/pomp and click the wallet icon to get started.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, let's get into this. So today, our opening slide is the free market solution to a broken cost of capital, which is an awesome, awesome title for this. Let's get into first. We've got the percent of GDP, a weighted average, global debt, and as a percent of GDP. What are you looking at here?
Yeah, so this is just the best chart I could find. It seems to be a little bit outdated, but it's just basically aggregate global debt. It's an estimate because it's not really known, to be honest, with how the financial system works, the euro dollar system, fractional reserve banking. But this is just basically a rough estimate of total global debt. And some estimates from people that I speak to say it's much higher, around 400 trillion. But either way, a trillion is a million millions. So quite a lot of debt out there. And, if we go to the next slide, we can kind of see what's kind of the problem here when we're talking about a free market solution and being Bitcoin being that. So this is the 10-year U.S. Treasury bond. For those that aren't really familiar, the dollar is the world reserve currency. So the U.S. Treasury bond and the yield off that is basically kind of the free market rate, or not free market, but the rate that the entire world, the entire financial system goes off of. So this is kind of that that bedrock that that the entire global financial system operates on. And so you can see from 1981 all the way to today, yields have been basically down to the right, a lot of lower highs. And so with every kind of financial crisis, every debt crisis, yields plummet, and you know, the kind of the credit binge continues. And this is nominal yield. So this is before inflation. And then the next chart is even a little bit scarier.
All right, next one, we've got the real 10-year Treasury bond yield versus the 10-year tips. What's this showing us?
Yeah, so you can just kind of ignore the tips, but what the real yield is it's the same chart that we just showed, but adjusted for inflation, right? So you can think of this, when you borrow money, you're paying an interest rate, and if you subtract the inflation rate on that debt that you're paying back, what's that yield you're paying on the debt? And so right now, with the U.S. Treasury bond, basically, if you buy the U.S.'s debt, you give money to the U.S. government in exchange for an interest payment and getting your money back at the end. Right now, on an annual basis, you get about a minus 5% return. And that's if CPI, that's if the inflation rate they're reporting is true. And so why is this a problem? Essentially, because not only, you know, are we talking about the debt, but every asset in the world, every asset has a valuation, has a market cap, has a fair value. It's being valued off of a negative cost of capital, negative real yield. So whether you're talking about Apple stock, or, you know, baseball card business, or anything, it's being valued with basically a cost of capital or a yield, where real yields across the planet, $300 trillion worth of assets, even more if you're counting equities and real estate and the whole nine yards, probably $500-700 trillion worth of value. It's all being basically valued with this distorted cost of capital because of central banking and because of how far we are in this kind of fiat debt-based monetary system. Rates can't sustainably rise or else the whole thing collapses. So we have a problem. And I think we have a solution as well.
It's absolutely nuts to think about how crazy this has gotten. Your next slide here is Bitcoin, the perpetual futures open interest. What is this showing us and why is this important?
Yeah, so I just, you know, this whole kind of slide deck, this whole presentation is to help people kind of understand, one, there's a big problem out there. And two, a lot of people throw around Bitcoin as a solution, or you'll hear digital gold, or, you know, Bitcoin is shorting bonds. And you hear all these sorts of analogies, but and especially with Bitcoin derivatives, there's a lot of confusion out there because these markets are really complex and they move really fast. But really what Bitcoin derivatives and what Bitcoin, the bearer asset, which has no yield, right? If you hold Bitcoin in your cold storage, there is no return in Bitcoin terms. You're just holding a digital bearer asset. But with Bitcoin derivatives, that is actually starting to change. And so there's this whole complex new world out there that I believe will, in the coming decade or maybe two, disrupt this $300 trillion bond market Ponzi. So the perpetual futures open interest, perpetual futures contract, we've gone over it a couple of times, but I get a lot of DMs, especially after your show's Pomp, and people are asking me to explain it a little bit further. And so, you know, I figured we could break it down a little bit. A perpetual futures contract is just a futures market that never expires and just rolls over. And so there's speculators that are betting on the price of Bitcoin to go up or down through long or shorts. And currently that market is about, you know, $10 to $20 billion, give or take. So it's still pretty small when you're thinking about, you know, the $100 to $500 trillion asset pie. But this market has seen incredible growth over the last couple of years. And I think we can expect that going forward.
Do you think that it can continue to grow materially from here? Or is this kind of like the, maybe not the top of the market, but definitely like it's harder to go kind of exponential from where we are. Like there was such major growth. How much bigger could this market get?
Yeah. So right now, Bitcoin's valued at about give or take $900 billion. You know, a lot of people have a lot of different opinions. And I think in terms of percentage growth on a relative basis, it's a lot harder for Bitcoin to say 10x like it did in a year in, say, 2013, than it, you know, compared to today when it would take, you know, hundreds of billions, you know, tens of trillions of dollars for that to occur again of capital inflight. But I would suspect that you know, $100 trillion, you know, valuing Bitcoin at $500,000 is, or wait, that's $5 million, I'm sorry, is basically what I would perceive to be relatively fair value when you consider just the monetary attributes and kind of the big problem in the world today, right? When people say, what solution does Bitcoin solve? I tell them the biggest problem in the world, the broken cost of capital. No other product or service or protocol can solve a $500 trillion problem. It's the biggest problem in the world today.
So when we go and we look at the actual futures funding rate, what is the difference here? Like, why is this important to you?
Yeah, so here we're talking about a cost of capital. And essentially what Bitcoin derivatives are, right, is we have this native bearer asset, Bitcoin, with no yield. And now we have a futures market built on top of it. And there's people that are betting on the price to go down or up. And with in a perpetual futures market and in any futures market, for every long, for every buyer, there's a seller, right? There's a contractual obligation. And so depending in the Bitcoin futures market, there's never more longs or shorts, but these players, these speculators can drive the price up or down. So if speculators in the futures market are driving the price higher than the spot market price, say the price on Coinbase, well, what's going to happen is there's going to be a funding rate applied to basically disincentivize or to tether this futures market price to the actual index market or to the spot market. So if speculators are really bidding the price of that perpetual futures market contract up, what you're going to see is funding's positive. So I applied a 7-day moving average to this funding rate over the last 2 years. And what do you see, right? At the beginning of say February of 2020, the funding rate every 8 hours was 0.88%. But on an annualized basis, that was 96%. So what does that mean? It was saying, you know, over a 7-day period, longs were paying shorts 96% to hold their position, right? So essentially, if you were just a market participant with some Bitcoin, you could just go short Bitcoin with just a small percentage of your stack, just be market neutral if you wanted to, and you could harvest a 96% yield in the Bitcoin futures market, right? And so I get people don't want to short Bitcoin, but what this is saying is that the cost of capital in this market is not centrally planned. There's no board or committee, and it's entirely free market dependent. So this happens on the long and short side, and there's massive liquidations that often occur, right? But really what this is saying is that we have this native cost of capital that isn't subject to any just board or committee or central planning market. It's completely open and free.
Speaking of those liquidations, you have the futures long liquidations, and it looks like things were real crazy back in the beginning of 21, but kind of cooled off towards the end of the year.
Yeah, so I threw this up here just to kind of show what happens when dislocations occur, right? So if you think about the financial crisis of 08 or 2020, every time that there's a 20, 30, maybe 40% drawdown in traditional markets, what happens? The lender of last resort comes in, they bail everybody out. In 08, they bought all the bad debt off the bank's balance sheets and pumped a bunch of money into the system to keep it afloat. In Bitcoin, there's the UTXO set, there's the full nodes that are enforcing a hard cap supply, and there is no lender or of last resort. You either have Bitcoin, you have enough collateral, or you don't. And so if all of a sudden that margin call comes in Bitcoin or in crypto, in these derivative markets, it's not called a margin call, it's called a liquidation. Basically, your account gets marked to zero and you lost your holdings. This is in steep contrast to the legacy system where often collateral is rehypothecated. And when, you know, a lot of market participants are all hurting at once, a lender of last resort comes in and, you know, bails the system out. And this is, you know, exactly the opposite of what we saw or what we see in Bitcoin all the time, where these huge volatile moves are, you know, occur on a regular basis and any dislocations are wiped out. And so this cost of capital in Bitcoin, although very variable, is entirely free and open. And so Bitcoin right now is 900 billion. Aggregate futures open interest, which we'll show on the next slide, is about 20 billion, right? Really small. It's about 2% of the market cap. But what happens when Bitcoin is in a $1 trillion asset and it's a $10 trillion or $100 trillion asset, and this futures market is $200 billion or a $2 trillion market with a floating cost of capital? And I suspect that it's really going to force the hand of all of these central banks around the world who, you know, centrally plan their cost of capital, centrally plan these interest rates. I think this will be a kind of a forcing mechanism, almost a check on the irresponsibility of central planners.
Got it. And then when we start to look at the annualized rolling basis, what is this showing us?
So this is just similar to the perpetual swaps. We have quarterly futures markets. So say March of 2022, there's a Bitcoin futures contract for that, right? So right now, Bitcoin, say at 47,000, the March 2022 contract could trade at, say, 48,000 or 49,000. And so if I was just interested in capturing a yield, right, like there's $300 trillion of fiat denominated debt out there chasing 1-3% nominal yields, right? There's $30 trillion of government debt. That's all basically at max getting 2% return on an annual basis. Well, right now, and it's very small, right? We're talking about $20 billion. But right now I can sell the forward Bitcoin futures contract in March. I can buy some Bitcoin today with the promise to pay, and I can get a 9-10% yield, right, on an annual basis. And while that may not seem like a lot, this has pretty big implications as this market, again, grows from, say, $20 billion to a lot larger, right? The whole point is that there is no central planning committee. There is no chairman to decide these rates, and it's entirely free market dependent, right? In April, right before we had these massive liquidations, you could do the same kind of trade where you sell the forward futures and you just buy Bitcoin and you're completely market neutral, meaning you're not dependent on the price going up or down. You're just flat. You could capture a 45% annual return. So the whole point is that whether it's perpetual swaps or quarterly futures, a lot of people get confused with derivatives, but the thing you have to know is there's a really big problem in the world. It's that the cost of capital is manipulated and planned. And with these basically completely native, crypto derivative markets, Bitcoin derivative markets, that's changing. And so while it may seem like it's a hindrance to Bitcoin's adoption and the volatility isn't good, what we have are free and open markets. And I think that can't be stressed enough.
I tend to think that it is very, very manipulated, which you're doing a great job of highlighting here, but I just don't think people quite understand how severe it is. Joe, John, what questions you guys got?
I'll ask Dylan, how do you think about all the futures ETFs going on? Like, how would you think about investing in one or not investing in one?
Yeah, I would think that I wouldn't buy futures ETFs just because there's a rolling kind of component to it. So the futures, Bitcoin futures, tend to trade above the price of a spot. So to say, for the example we just gave, the March futures contract is trading at, a little bit $1,000 higher than the spot price. But, the CME's or like the Valkyrie ETF, say, is buying CME futures and they're rolling it in the front month futures every single month. So you're basically buying Bitcoin higher than its price, selling it and doing that every single month. And over the long term, basically kind of correlates to the Bitcoin performance, you underperform Bitcoin itself. So I would say for any kind of retail investor to just figure out, how to buy a Bitcoin and eventually take custody yourself, which you couldn't do with a securitized product like a futures ETF. But for someone that's allocating capital on an institutional basis, who can't go buy Bitcoin on Square or Strike, right? The only option they have, really. So, it's good for overall adoption for big players, but I think the spot ETF will be a lot more optimal in that sense.
And then what have you seen with on-chain, with people moving coins on or off, like in between hot and cold storage?
Yeah, we've seen kind of this trend since March of 2020 of big outflows from exchanges. That was kind of the macro top for this exchange balance trend. Through the 2017 bull market, coins were flying onto exchanges. And since then, we've kind of seen the opposite. The last couple of months have stalled. But really, I think you're seeing just kind of this natural organic adoption of people realizing that Bitcoin is this digital bearer asset. And there is this kind of sovereignty that you can achieve with any other asset. And aside from the financial side of things, which, I tend to focus on a lot, it is really empowering that people can hold all of their wealth, move anywhere in the world, and even memorize 12 words in their head and just take it with them. So that's definitely something encouraging to see. And that also kind of has this supply squeeze impact on the price if occurring, with a lot of people at once.
Joe, you got any questions?
Yeah, Dylan, do you have any I wouldn't call them like wild predictions, but any idea of something that might be like a big catalyst for the upcoming year? I assume some easy ones would be like if an ETF is approved, right? If we get some more clear idea around regulation, if the US adopts this in some way or if another country adopts it like El Salvador. But is there anything that I'm not thinking about that you think could have a big impact on price?
Yeah, I think you nailed it a little bit there. Just with a lot of the stuff in this space is narrative driven, and you kind of see FOMO in sight with, say, what happened after March of 2020. We chopped around at 9,000 all summer, and the accumulation was occurring under the surface. And then Michael Saylor comes out and says, "We're on a Bitcoin standard. Everyone should do this. You know, you're sitting on melting ice cubes." And then like a parabolic run ensued. And so I think, you know, everyone's kind of bored at 45,000, which would seem crazy just a year ago. But I think that, you know, the next kind of things on the checklist are, you know, additional corporate adoption, the accounting standards, that the GAAP accounting standards could definitely improve. So Bitcoin's not treated as an intangible asset. That's one thing. The next thing is, I think you saw Bukele tweet out his predictions for 2022 and saying additional nation state adoption. I think there's going to be some exciting news at the Bitcoin conference that we'll see. He'll be there attending. And so I would expect to see some additional nations, some additional corporations, and a lot of like pension funds and insurance funds under the surface, still just kind of accumulating small positions, right? Because they're you know, in the game to basically protect and hand out fiat denominated liabilities over decade, you know, two decade, three decade long time horizons. So Bitcoin, in that sense, in a world where real yields are negative across the board, Bitcoin becomes very, very attractive. So I think those are just a few catalysts. And I think once we see kind of a big one, the whole FOMO stage that we saw in late 2020 will pick back up again. And then that's when things get exciting.
Yeah. Do you think people, leaders of other countries are calling up Bukele and just saying, "Hey, like, how did you do this? Give me the playbook."
Yeah. I think there's definitely a lot of eyeballs on what he's doing in his strategy, especially for countries that don't have their own currency.
Yeah.
Right. So Bukele was on the dollar standard. So, you know, he got like, he had, you know, all the, like the hardship of having basically foreign reserves and or operating on a dollar standard, but he couldn't get to print it. Right. So when the dollar value really like skyrocketed in, say, you know, early 2020, and everyone was hit across the board, there was no way to stimulate. And so he said, "Okay, well, I'm not going to make my own crappy currency because no one will value it outside of the people that I impose to use it. I'm just going to plug into this open monetary standard and you know, potentially see the gains through, say, you know, harnessing untapped energy sources and basically, you know, having people all over the world that are now interested in my little country that weren't before." And so I think there's definitely some sort of game theory in play. Although we haven't seen it play out, I think there's definitely some interesting discussions happening under the surface because, you know, we aren't the only ones paying attention here.
Dylan, when you think about kind of the conversation, the sentiment on Twitter, it seems like a lot of people, I don't want to say maybe they are getting lulled to sleep, but there's people who are kind of saying, I don't know what's happening to Bitcoin. It didn't hit 100K by the end of the year. What's going on? Is that more concerning to you, or is that exactly what you would expect before it makes some big move and kind of breaks out with some volatility in either direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of nailed it there. It's definitely people are getting a little bored. A lot of people expected a lot higher prices. You have people now calling for a lot lower prices. It's interesting just kind of how sentiment can shift where just, you know, say 12 months ago, we were euphoric as Bitcoin broke $30,000. And so it's important to kind of just, you know, keep things, you know, just have a little bit of a long time horizon and understand what's at play. Nothing has changed in terms of the long-term Bitcoin thesis. And if anything, it's never looked any better. And so we saw a lot of, you know, pretty big things happen in 2021, the Taproot soft fork and all these other things that have been basically in the works for a long, long time. And so sitting at 45 or 47,000 at the beginning of 2022, I'm a pretty ecstatic buyer. And, you know, even though the charts may not be too exciting nowadays, you know, nothing has really changed in the long-term game.
Makes sense. My last question for you is, yesterday was Bitcoin's birthday, 13 years. Any takeaways from just like how far we've come in 13 years?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty astounding. Just thinking about the foresight of whatever Satoshi Nakamoto is. Don't know if he's still around, but it's definitely one of the most, you know, altruistic things that's really ever been done in human history. I think Satoshi Nakamoto is kind of this legendary figure that gifted something to humanity and took back nothing in return. You know, those a million or so Bitcoin estimated, having never moved, walked away from the software project with no claim to fame, just disappeared, you know, giving us all, you know, a peaceful alternative to fiat currency and kind of the money manipulation that's occurred at scale for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so in that sense, it's kind of a beautiful thing. And I think, you know, everybody should learn about the Bitcoin protocol and kind of figure out this thing and how it can empower you. January 3rd is known as Proof of Keys Day, which is basically, you know, to take Bitcoin off exchange, hold it yourself, you know, establish your sovereignty to the maximum degree. And so I encourage everyone to learn a little bit more about that. And it's definitely cool to, you know, get another year in the books.
I completely agree. By the way, you know what else happened?
What?
Sliding in right before the end of the year. 100K followers for Dylan.
100K.
Yep.
Let's get it.
Six figures.
Let's get it.
What next? Do you have a goal for this year? Can we get to 100K? A million is probably difficult. Can you get to 600K, you think?
I mean, hell, I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. 100K happened a lot faster than I think. I mean, I don't really have an objective goal for Twitter followers. I just kind of, you know, post my thoughts and then it happens. So it's cool to see, definitely. It's cool to interact with all these people around the world. I had my first person come up to me and approach me in the gym the other day. And that was an interesting,
thing.
They're like, dude, I see you on Pomp's show. That's so cool. I was like,
Did you ask them if they liked the videos? Did you ask them if they liked the videos? Like, what's up with that?
Yeah. He was like, I watch them all. I was like, damn, that's pretty cool. It was weird.
You're like, move over. I got to bench 500 now.
You tell them I write a newsletter, deep dive.
Yeah. Did you get them to sign up for the newsletter?
Show that too. Yeah. I told them to sign up for the newsletter as well. check out if you like this kind of stuff. We post a lot of the same, you know, stuff on derivatives and on chain and macro data for the deep dive. It's in my bio. So give it a check out. We just put out our annual report for 2021.
Dylan, are you doing anything differently with your personal position on Bitcoin and thoughts on Bitcoin, like how to allocate capital to it in 2022 versus last year?
You know, there's some things I do kind of on the margin with, you know, I hold a super majority of my, I guess, liquid net worth in cold storage, you know, depending on some of the derivative data or some of the other stuff I'll do things that are a little more complex, like long or short volatility and other stuff and options maybe, which, you know, I don't really encourage many people to do. I just, you know, just stack and there's no way you can lose, but, in terms of now, no, I expect a little bit more consolidation for the coming kind of weeks. That was my base case in December-ish. So, you know, I think we'll see a little bit more chop before things heat up here, but nothing's really changed in terms of my personal allocation.
I don't know if we got anything else for you, man. I'm impressed. You continue to get better and better, and your analysis is pretty damn good. It's like I get like a front seat to a little education every single week, so I appreciate you. Any plans this week for kicking off the new year?
No, not much. Actually, headed to Nashville with the BM team. We're gonna get together and you know, make some quarterly plans. So that's exciting. I'm excited to go get out of the cold.
All right, man. Sounds good. I'll see you when you move to Miami.
See you guys. Thanks.
See ya.